Coming up today, another exclusive interview with a motorsport leader. Well, Bob Bell has enjoyed a stellar career as a top engineer in Formula One with McLaren, Benetton, Jordan, Renault and Mercedes. He was technical director at Renault during the Alonso title-winning years, then team principal after the departure of Flavio Briatore. And more recently, he was one of the architects of the current Mercedes F1 juggernaut. In the latest Hashtag Thinking Forward interview with the sport's leaders and influential thinkers, Bob explains to our own James Allen the Grid for Good mission. He explains why he believes F1 is about to enter a golden age and looks ahead to a time when F1 and Formula E could merge. Enjoy today's interview.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining us on this Hashtag Thinking Forward series. You've had an unbelievable career as a top engineer in Formula One with McLaren, Benetton, Jordan, Renault, Mercedes. You were the technical director at Renault during the Alonso title-winning years. Some great cars, great drivers in your career. You've even been a team principal with Renault for a while. But tell us how the Grid for Good initiative came about.
So I turned 60 a couple of years ago, and I've always promised myself that when I reached that point, I would try and step back from racing and do something different. For personal reasons, I didn't want to end up being a one-trick pony, but also perhaps to try and do something for society. And I think motorsport does a lot for society, so I've no issue with that, and I'm proud of what it does. But I thought, for me personally, to do something a little bit more direct would be good. So at the end of 2019, at the start of 2019, myself and a couple of colleagues from F1 started Grid for Good with the idea that we could just keep it fairly small and quiet in the background and take on projects where we might be able to act as an intermediary between problems in the not-for-profit sector and hook them up with potential pro bono or low-cost solution providers in the world of motorsport, and covering all bases, really, that motorsport indulges itself in, from pure technical issues through to marketing, PR, commercial. There's so much expertise that in motorsport to be able to make the whole thing operate that we didn't really necessarily draw any boundaries around what we'd offer. And we got off to a reasonable start in 2019. We've helped a couple of UK charities, reasonably well-known, revamp all their PR and marketing. A couple of F1 PR agencies did that for us for no fee. And we've got an F1 team, or we started an F1 team, re-engineering an electric wheelchair for a challenge to raise awareness for electric wheelchair users on the roads. So that's still ongoing. And then, of course, the COVID crisis came on at the start of this year, and the whole of the pit lane bandied together to offer their support to government to help with some of the technical challenges around that. Grid for Good were a part of that through the Project Pit Lane initiative. And it sort of proved the concept, really, in a way that I could never have hoped for. So that's sort of where we are today, and we continue. We have a few legacy medical-related COVID-19 projects on the go, and always on the lookout for new ones.
Well, I was going to ask you about the active projects that you've got on the go, but you've mentioned the Project Pit Lane, and obviously we saw that amazing reaction from Formula One teams. I think what was so striking about it was not just the innovation, but it was the speed of reaction, wasn't it? The fact that normal processes would take a long, long time. We were hearing on the news, you know, many months to develop some of these CPAP machines and respirators and things like that. But Formula One was able to bring its speed of reaction. What stood out for you about that episode?
I think you've hit the nail absolutely on the head. It's the speed of reaction. And I think if I think about what motorsport can bring to society, it's possibly less about the details of the technology or the services it can provide, because you know, the technology we use is not that advanced relative to what's flying over our heads or in space or underwater or wherever. Some incredible technology in the world today, even what you wear on your wrist. But what F1 does seem to be able to bring, or motorsport in general, is this can-do attitude, which is beginning to diminish in the world. the world is becoming more and more complex, more and more bureaucratic, more and more difficult to operate in, and for good reason, not being critical. But F1 can really bring a can-do attitude, and I think the whole COVID situation and the motorsport community's reaction and assistance in it was taking an engineering challenge and turning around a solution in record-breaking time. It wasn't the technology that was important. It was the fact that we were able to do it in the time that we did. And there are lots of examples, not just the ventilators and things that Project Pitlane was involved in, but there were projects in France. Renault Sport in France did similar things. Ferrari did stuff in Italy. Everybody reacted in one way or another. And I think in all cases, it was just the fact that you give us a challenge, we'll find a solution with the tools we've got faster than anybody else, because that's what we're paid to do.
You've been arguing for this for some time, haven't you? I mean, it's great that you've put your money where your mouth is and done this. But you've long believed that the sort of the transfer of technology and of know-how from motorsport to wider society is incredibly relevant. And a lot of people don't realize that things like seatbelts and disc brakes and deformable crash drops, so many things that are in everyday life actually originated in motorsport. And so you must feel pretty gratified that that's actually being recognized now.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the whole industry for that. And again, there are examples, and you've mentioned some, where there are specific pieces of technology that have transferred to broader society for the greater good. But I think one of the things that goes under the radar that motorsport, particularly F1, brings is the techniques and the methodologies that are used. And again, this is all related to doing stuff quickly. So we make extensive use of computational fluid dynamics, for example, in F1 to design the aerodynamics of the cars. And we use exactly the same software packages as normal industry. But we really squeeze those packages and our use of them to make it as efficient as we possibly can, the process of designing something as efficient as we can. And those techniques and methodologies do filter out into the broader world. So in a couple of ways, so for example, you may or may not recall that Renault, this is just by way of example, has a very good technical partnership with Boeing, and we tackle some problems of mutual technical interest. And one of the things that always filters to the top of those lists of things to do together are to do with methodology, how to use CFD better or computer-aided design in some other form better, rather than developing a specific piece of technology. And again, in the COVID crisis, this was demonstrated with our use of computational fluid dynamics to analyze particle aerosol motion from patients who are being treated in hospital. When they cough, for example, if they're having intubation procedures carried out on them, where do the aerosol particles go? How long does it take them to evacuate a room? These are really, really challenging problems to analyze. It can only be done using computational fluid dynamics, and we have particular expertise in doing that quickly and getting believable answers. So it's as much about how we use our tools and the methodologies and the working practices and the processes as it is about specific pieces of technology or gadgets.
Broadening the conversation discussion out a bit from there, I mean, we've also seen very strongly this year that a shift towards purpose-driven motorsport, the idea that, you know, I think it's true of a lot of sports, but certainly with motorsport, that just being an entertainment platform isn't really going to be enough going forward. And obviously there's been the sustainability push that was going on before COVID, same with diversity and accessibility. But we've seen all of those things accelerated. And of course, more recently, the social justice piece that's becoming bigger and bigger in the sport. It's been quite a step change. What do you make of what's happened in 2020 in that sense?
It has been a step change. I mean, I was trying to think back to when I first heard the phrase corporate social responsibility in my world. And it's probably less than 5 years. Couldn't put a date on it, but that wouldn't surprise me. And now it's a really big thing, particularly for the big organizations that own Formula One teams, like Renault or Fiat or Mercedes. Corporate social responsibility is a big, big thing for them now, and they all have CSR policies that they need to grow and develop. These organizations need to become much more cognizant of the social issues in the world, and that filters its way down to their racing teams. And it's not just, of course, the big corporates that have that. Lots of smaller organizations in the world of motorsport that are perhaps privately owned. I guess people like Extract, for example, they've got very strong sense of social responsibility and have their own CSR policies and so on. So it's sort of coming down from the top and also coming from grassroots level. But it is a step change, and it's becoming really important because society is changing. The younger generation, the fans that we're trying to capture and keep on board, they demand something different of us than what their predecessors did. And I think if we don't acknowledge that and react to it, we'll lose them. The sport will wither in some way. So that is important. It is being recognized, and I think F1 under the new leadership of Liberty, with Ross and his team, and Chase, are doing everything they can to make sure that Formula One is on top of that. But that's just one element of motorsport in general, and we're seeing it everywhere. But it's really important, and it has to be recognized and it has to be dealt with. And it's not just environmental issues, which is the obvious one for motorsport to concern itself with. As you say, it's a lot to do with inclusivity, things like STEM topics, all of this, diversity, equality, fairness, all of this is absolutely part and parcel of it as well. And I think Formula One and motorsport in general has always had a good record in that regard, not an obvious one, in as much as people would say, well, it's always been a white male dominated sport. That's true, but that's not because we've wanted it to be that way. It's because that's the way society in general has tended to evolve with technology based topics and so on. You only have to look at the inequality, for example, in the world of physics or conductors of orchestras. It's always dominated by white males. I don't think Formula One's any different in that way. But I think from my experience in Formula One, I've never really seen any examples where there's been positive or clear discrimination. It's always been inclusive. It is the ultimate competitive environment, and you survive in it by being the best at your job. Doesn't matter what your background is. If you're better at it than somebody else, we'll have you. But that isn't necessarily apparent from the outside, and that's something we need to change.
It's interesting you say that, Bob, because I did some work at behind the scenes at Mercedes last year and met some of the young engineers that are there, and several of them, or quite a lot of them, were female. And yeah. I got the impression that just generally as well, looking across the paddock, quite a number of the senior race strategists now on Formula One teams, and some of the most effective are female. And definitely that diversity in that sense is increasing. I mean, obviously you as someone who pays very close attention to this, how do you feel that there's, you know, from different ethnic backgrounds and more female participation, do you sense that is growing within the sport? That the faces on the pit wall 5-10 years from now will be quite different in the more senior positions?
Oh, absolutely. And it's to be welcomed. But I think the problem starts earlier in society than the point where it reaches motorsport. I think there is a problem that starts from the first days of schooling. I think that there is absolutely a need in society to interest a much bigger sector of society in becoming engineers, scientists, and that's ethnic diversity as well as sex. And I think until society is able to start building a better culture of equal opportunity and equal interest in these topics, the end result where you finish your education and you get a job, you end up in motorsport. That will always appear as if it's not doing enough. I think we need to work at all levels, from grassroots, from primary school right away up. We need to start engendering a culture of interest in subjects that have traditionally been considered sort of white male territory, the sciences and so on. And F1 and motorsport can do its bit, but we need to see change further down the scale as well.
You mentioned Ross and Chase and the direction that Liberty are taking Formula One. Clearly, this year has been an important year, getting the Concorde Agreement signed, albeit just for 5 years. The budget cap and the sort of levelling up, the sort of small levelling up agenda measures, which I never thought I would see in Formula One. It's brought a much needed stability. But I wonder, with all your experience and your, you know, with your crystal ball, do you think the sport will actually be able to capitalise on that and be the best version of F1 that it can be in the future?
I think absolutely it can. I think, you know, F1's always good. You look back at its history and you can't really point a finger and you think that was bad, that wasn't good, you know. I think what we've now got and what we will evolve to will be the best it's been. I think it's the direction it's going in, with genuine attempts to take cost out, is absolutely crucial. You cannot justify the budgets involved in going F1 racing with the rest of society. It just doesn't stack up, and that's not sustainable. So that's really important. And we need to level the playing field, and that won't happen by itself. It'll only happen by strong governance, and that's what we have with Liberty ownership of F1 at the moment, and what we have within the FIA under Jean. So I think it is going in the right direction. I don't think it will diminish the sporting spectacle in any way. I think it'll still be great racing. We'll still have great champions, great drivers. And of course, Formula One isn't just about what happens on the track. Increasingly, what happens off the track is of great interest to the public and the fans. You know, the success of the Netflix series, Drive to Survive, and, you know, all of these things, the increase in social media. People want more than just the racing on a Sunday afternoon. And there will always be purists who feel that isn't what they want, but they are becoming an increasing minority. And I think to be sustainable, Formula One has to change and reflect the wants and needs of a potential fan base. Otherwise, it'll just wither. And that's not just stuff mentioned, like what happens off the track, but I think it also touches on this whole issue of where does the future of the sport lie technically? You know, we do have this challenge ahead of us that Formula One is essentially a hybrid formula at the minute, but dominated by internal combustion engine technology. We have Formula E running in parallel, which is entirely electric. You know, that dichotomy has to be resolved at some point. You know, we need to function to both of those routes for the future. But no, I'm very optimistic about Formula One. I think it's in good, safe hands, and the prospects are good.
It's interesting you bring that topic up, because that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Obviously, what we're seeing is Formula One and Formula E, the budgets are kind of converging towards each other a bit, aren't they? Formula E's coming up a bit and Formula One's coming down a bit. As you say, at some point in the future, they're going to have to converge. But obviously, Formula E's got the exclusive sort of license on the electric mobility side. But if we look down the track, sort of 15, 20 years from now, and imagine what motorsport would be, do you see it as being sort of electric or hydrogen powered sort of prototype cars on the single seater and the Le Mans type level, and then kind of customer racing and sort of a place for the NASCARs and the touring cars of this world in there at all? And what do you think the motorsport, you know, spectrum will look like?
Yeah, I think ultimately it will become very much CO2 zero at the big prestigious end of the market. Formula One, Formula E will resolve their differences and will probably end up with one championship, whatever that looks like. Same for Le Mans and so on. All of these formulas will head towards all electric or hydrogen powered or whatever comes our way. I think there'll still be a place in the hearts and minds of many people for racing that harks back to a different era. The people interested in that will probably become more and more in the minority, but I think we shouldn't turn our back on our heritage either. We need to look to the future. We need to build a sustainable future for society, but I think you can do yourself a lot of harm. And I'm in danger of getting on a soapbox here, but you can do yourself a lot of harm in society if you turn your back on the past. You will not learn the lessons of the past, you will neglect your heritage, you won't learn from history, all these things. And I think it's important that we recognise our heritage and that there's still a place, albeit at a very small scale, and at such a small scale in global terms that it really has no negative impact on, you know, on the environment for all of this. I suppose the best analogy is in the world of aviation. There is great heritage and great love of vintage aircraft. You know, nobody likes to see anything more than, you know, a Spitfire flying overhead and the sound of a Merlin engine, because it's got such historical connotations. It means so much to us. And I think there are a lot of elements of racing where it'll still be important to have, you know, particularly grassroots, to have, you know, formulas that are perhaps still slightly out of date, but it's important to have that heritage. And I think the big picture stuff and sustainability stuff can all be done by the big categories up towards the top, not just because they reduce their own environmental footprint. The actual environmental footprint of running 20 race cars around a track for 2 hours on Sunday is completely negligible. But where Formula One and the big categories make a difference is leading the charge on technologies, demonstrating technologies that will be applicable across the globe. But that's where the real difference of Formula One comes. It's not what we actually do ourselves on a Sunday afternoon. That's trivial. So I think for me personally, it's using motorsport, F1 perhaps in particular, as a vehicle to promote technologies, to help develop technologies as fast as possible, and to set an example to the rest of the world.
It's interesting, obviously, you know, a lot of your career you worked for manufacturer-backed teams, and so you know better than anybody the reasons why manufacturers go racing. You mentioned earlier on that you think, you know, one of the key boxes they're going to need to tick in the future is CSR, you know, a sense of purpose, along with the marketing benefit that they get, the return on investment and the technology. But obviously they're undergoing not only a tough time as a result of the lockdown, although we are seeing some car sales now definitely starting up again, but just generally that whole pivot of their entire industry. What's your sense of the appetite of manufacturers for motorsport, and do you feel that it's the level of investment is going to be reduced, and that they perhaps need to focus just on one or two particular series that have a real sort of point of differentiation?
Yeah, I mean, the basics didn't change for a while. They want brand value. They want to increase brand awareness. They want to increase product sales through F1. And there are obviously financial players in Formula One that have no sporting heritage of their own. So it is all about increasing sales and brand awareness, all these things. And that will become increasingly important for them. The days where you could woo a CEO into writing a large check to put the company's name on the side of the car, almost more as an egotistical exercise, has long gone. So they've got to get real value for money now. But some of them genuinely have a sporting heritage. Renault, Mercedes, Fiat, Ferrari, I suppose are the best examples in F1. They have a genuine heritage they want to uphold, they want to develop, because it's part of their culture, part of the DNA. It's important to them. So I don't think that will disappear for some time. And I think many of them want to be able to maintain that, but at the same time be seen to be in step with the rest of society. That's why we're seeing so many of the major manufacturers in the automotive sector pouring into Formula E, because it's an opportunity to go racing and promote their heritage, but at the same time be environmentally conscious.
And as well as what you're doing now with Grid for Good, I understand you're also a member of the FIA research group. and that's involved in I think taking safety lessons from motorsport and applying them in the outside world. So how does that fit with your Grid for Good, and what sort of activities you got to there?
So I contacted the FIA about a year ago and said, look, I've set up Grid for Good. I know that the FIA is deeply involved, deeply concerned about global road safety. And obviously, the figures, when you look at it, are simply staggering, even compared to the COVID-19 crisis. You know, 1.3 million people are killed every year on the roads globally. 50 million people are injured. Those are hideous statistics. And they're stable. You know, there's not much sign of drop in that. So I thought an obvious avenue for me, for Grid for Good, was to try and help there where we could with the FIA and what they're trying to do. And I got a very strong support from them, and they invited me to join a safety research group, which you've just mentioned, and also act in an advisory capacity for their high-level panel for road safety, which is part of the UN's decade of road safety initiative. So I've been working through Grid for Good, volunteering my services through Grid for Good to both of those causes. Specifically the one you mentioned, the safety research group, I think its roots go back to undertaking fundamental research to try and make motorsport safer. So historically, we'd have seen things like the HAMS device, more latterly, the Halo device, biometric gloves, cockpit padding, all of the things that we now take for granted all have their roots in some element of the FIA's history in safety equipment development. But I think now they want to expand that. The FIA is putting a lot more emphasis now on its mobility side, which is only half of what it's there. Most of us in motorsport only ever think about them as being associated with motorsport, but of course they have a huge global footprint of mobility clubs, which is really important. And I think they want to use the safety research group now as a means by which motorsport technology can also be made available to the broader mobility sector. And this is a very recent thing. I think that shift is has always had some small elements, but it's really taking that direction now. And the FIA is also interested in generating revenue to support their foundation and their other funds to support innovative development to tackle mobility issues as it relates to safety. And efficiency and sustainability and so on. So it fits absolutely with the sort of ethos of Grid for Good, and I'm very happy to help them where I'm qualified to do so.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Bob, I really appreciate you taking the time today to speak to us, and thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. It's great to get your insights on the way you think that the sport is going to develop, and the very best of luck to you with the Grid for Good initiative.
Thank you, James. It's been a real pleasure.